Paddy and Rob Palmer, the podcast.
Rob, I think it was Saturday we got the news that Barry Humphries, age 89, had passed away.
And it didn't matter what sort of where you came from, what you did, how you viewed anything. If you saw Barry, you loved Barry. It just was the way he was. And everyone felt a tinge of sadness.
Of course.
When that news came through, even though it wasn't unexpected.
And the way he was, it spanned his humour, spanned decades, it spanned generations. I remember Dad saying, he used to love Dame Edna.
He used to be able to say the most uncomfortable things to anyone. And it didn't matter who you were, you felt comfortable. You could be insulted with a smile on your face and everyone laughed along with it.
And I know Australian TV royalty Ray Martin has caught up with Barry Humphries and Dame Edna. And this was from, I think it was about 17 years ago when Ray caught up with them on 60 Minutes. Have a listen.
It's an emotional moment. Dame Edna is coming home at last.
I doubt if anyone in Moonee Ponds has had a facelift of any kind. This chin, that was added. This double chin was added.
Is that right?
It belonged to Elizabeth Taylor. It was her left love handle.
And the man who caught up with Celeste Patterson, Dame Edna, and also Barry Humphries is Ray Martin. Ray joins us this morning. Good morning, Ray.
Hello, Ray.
Morning, guys. You're just listening to that makes me laugh. That's what he or she or they did. And it was quite amazing. I think alongside, after Bradman, he was probably the greatest living Australian.
Mate, I read some of the tweets that people have sent over the weekend since Barry's passing. Ricky Gervais, comedy superstar, farewell Barry Humphries, you comedy genius. Maddie Lucas from Little Britain, I wonder if all geniuses are as lovely as Barry Humphries. It's amazing the effect and the impact he's had right around the world.
Yeah, no, he didn't. That's nice, right through to King Charles. It's good to see that recognition at last. I think that, you know, he and Hoags would have to be light years in front of every other very, very good comic we've had in Australia. He was that good. But he used to call me Raymond. It was always, along with my mother, who was the only one that ever called me Raymond. she would call me Raymond, rather. And it was very funny. I feel like he'd been dressed down every time you interviewed him.
And Ray, I did watch that yesterday on YouTube, your interview on 60 Minutes. It was 17 years ago. I think it was celebrating the 50th anniversary of Barry Humphries. And I just laughed the whole way through. It's just sensational.
Yeah, I did too. And the difficult thing, he and Robin Williams were probably the hardest and all the 10,000 plus interviews I did over those years because you were laughing so much. It was very hard to do a sensible interview with him because he or she was so incredibly funny. And it was interesting that the moment he put, Maggie Tabra and I did Fergie's wedding back in 1986 and in London on a red bus outside the Cathedral in London where Fergie was married. And we had Dame Edna and Joan Rivers, the American, on as well. And they were wickedly funny. I mean, just wickedly funny about, the advice they'd given to Sarah on the wedding night and that sort of stuff. You can imagine what she went through with what she should be wearing and what she shouldn't be wearing, etc. But anyway, at one stage when the car went by with Sarah in the back of this open car near the cathedral, Dame Edna stood up and waved the gladdies, and you saw Sarah look across and see her and wave like crazy. So even in the minutes before the wedding, she recognised that Dame Edna was there.
It seemed as though, Ray, the rules of decency did not apply to Barry Humphries. He could say anything and get away with it. How do you think he was able to do that?
Well, I guess he was very, very clever. Interview Robin Williams, as you guys probably did in those early days. He knew that you could, as funny as he was, and the funniest, you could hear lines that he'd used on television quite a lot. But with Dame Edna, it was pretty much off the cuff. And so she and Barry and Les Patterson were capable of doing and saying anything. And, of course, if Dame Edna did it properly, as she usually would, in a very sort of in a grandmotherly way, she got away with Blue Murder. And as I say, the things that she would say as double entendres and so on that you know were wickedly funny, but she would keep a straight face.
And Barry Humphries was a very clever man.
You know, a beautiful. I mean, I launched his first autobiography of one of two he did, and I think it was probably the best that I ever read. It was just clever. He was just a clever man. His use of words, his love of language, was such that when he was playing any of these characters, of course, he would just use words that you and I have never heard before, and as he did in the book. And I thought, gee, I think I'm pretty well read. And I'd go and check it out and find it was the perfect word, but I didn't know what the word was. I'd never heard the word before. Often. Nautical terms that he just sort of put in there and get away with it. But that's what he was. He was like a walking encyclopedia.
And is there a clue, Ray, to where this came from? Him as a kid or you know, because he wasn't a sporty kid. He didn't like maths. Where did it come from?
No, he was certainly wasn't sporty. No, he used to run a million miles from anything that had a ball or a racket involved. He was the eldest of four kids in middle-class Melbourne. That's really obviously what Dame Edna was something that he mocked in that, what he'd seen in his mother early on, a poor dear in that. But I think he was just this incredibly perceptive man. That if you think how she changed from when she first came out of Moonee Ponds into the giga star she became and was really up with the latest trends in everything, it's a mark of how clever he was. And she didn't just stay stuck in the past, as you'd expect a character to over 50 or 60 years, but she was as modern when, you know, at the end as she was at the start.
Yeah, 70 years of entertaining the world. Barry Humphries passed away at the age of 89. Ray Martin, thank you very much for reflecting on such a great Australian entertainer. Thank
nice
you.
One,
great pleasure, Rob. Thanks, Paddy. All the best, mate.
A man of many faces.
Look at me, possums, aren't I gorgeous?
A master of satire.
I've had a couple of drinks, as a matter of fact, but I've still got control of my faculties.
An entertainer who held a mirror to Australia.
I had a phone call from Mr. Hawke. He rang me up. Really? We're very reached, thrilled with a new Gallup poll. 78% of Australians adore me, he said. He did. I said, darling, you only need another 22% to be neck and neck with me, possums.
Australian actor and comedian Barry Humphries has died. He was best known for creating some of the country's most quintessential characters and spent more than 50 years making audience around the world laugh.
My husband keeps a very low profile with regard to his illness. As a matter of fact, he never mentions his prostate, and when he does, he only mentions it in passing.
Barry Humphries died in Sydney's St Vincent Hospital overnight, where he was being treated after complications from hip surgery. He was 89.
Ladies and gentlemen, clear the stage.
I'm ready for my public. Isn't this exciting?
It's the man who brought so much joy wherever he went. For the final time, the comedian responsible for the characters of Dame Edna Everidge, Sir Les Paterson and Sandy Stone will exit stage left.
You're looking absolutely beautiful as always.
Aren't I, darling? Of course, women will be copying this frock slavishly, won't they?
I know what all you sheilas are staring at. You're all looking at my penis, aren't you? And there she is, ladies and gentlemen.
Glad to know you. Barry McKenzie's the name, but most of me mates call me Bazza.
Cop that, you rotten pommy bastard.
He was quite piercing. He wanted to get below things. He wanted to see through pretension and ask really quite profound questions. Mm. He was very interesting in that way and very creative. And he always made you laugh. He was definitely ahead of his time.
I'm flying.
Rob Palmer, the podcast.
It's just something chilling about haunting. A dawn service.
Yeah, it's haunting, as is The Last Post. And debate has broken out online over the playing of The Last Post throughout the entirety of the winter football rounds in the lead up to Anzac Day. Like, I didn't watch AFL, but I know with the rugby leagues before the matches, I thought it was great how they did it. All the teams walked out there, they all lined up, they played The Last Post. It's haunting. And it's a time where I remember on Friday night, and you just stop. And you just reflect and you think, God, for the service that these men and women gave to us to protect us, to, you know, you just go, wow.
Well, but the thing is, let's say, what if you're watching four games of footy in catch up, right? And you get to this and you watch the last and four back to back games, you watch them, and there's The Last Post at the beginning of each one.
Well, you just fast forward if you didn't want to watch it.
That's what I mean. But the fact that people are probably fast-forwarding the last post, does that disturb you? I don't think that should happen.
But it does
because it's there so often over the weekend. It's there everywhere.
But it was eight games. It was played eight times. Is that?
Oh, no, no. Plus other codes.
I mean, I'm talking about in rugby league.
Yeah, that's because you only think in terms of rugby league.
Yeah, but do you watch AFL and rugby league? Did you?
Yes, I watched all other. I watched other codes as well.
Did you watch AFL as
rugby
well?
Rugby union I watched.
Did you? So did
I
they
got,
do it?
No, so I got. I fast-forwarded to kickoff.
But look, on our Triple M social page, we put, should it only be reserved for Anzac Day? Tony said, don't care if it's called Anzac Round. It's called Anzac Round for a reason. Every game, 100% stand up for them like they stood up for us. Not hard at all. Don't know why this is even up for discussion. Terry, no, at events around Anzac Day, it should be allowed. It's a way for the game to show respect to our servicemen and women, keeping Anzac Day strong and not just a public holiday. Luke wrote, though, yep, it's not as right as it has now become a publicity gimmick for football games and such.
Do you think?
Well, I'm just saying what Dan wrote.
Well, I know. I was trying to find a comment that wasn't in support of the last
there's
post.
There's a few. There's a few there. Yeah.
Paddy and Rob Palmer, the podcast.
And today we thought we'd get in a former soldier from the ADF. He's from Canwell. It's Craig Ball. He joins us this morning. Good morning, Craig.
G'day, guys. How are you going?
Not too bad.
Right there as well.
Mate, pretty special day tomorrow, isn't it, for you guys?
Most definitely. Yeah. It's been a very interesting week emotionally leading up to this, even today for me. I sort of get in a bit of a funny emotional zone and you realise the butterflies and funny emotions. You're like, oh, this is, here we go. We're getting ready for another year. So it's like as big a day as Christmas is for my kids.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
As someone who has served, do you feel the nation's support behind this as strong now as you have before?
Yeah, I do. I think that, my world's changed dramatically since we moved up here. And I feel that the community support up on the coast is just amazing. So, yeah, I don't follow politics a lot anymore. Now that I don't need to worry about where we may be sent next. Mm. I think the patriotism and the support's pretty good.
Craig, across the weekend, because it was with the rugby league, also the AFL, they did the playing of the last post throughout the entirety of all the rounds in the lead up to Anzac Day to reflect and remember. And then people were saying, oh, it should be only kept for Anzac Day, playing the last post. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I love the last post. I mean, it's drilled into me. It's part of it. And a lot of people from the military would feel the same way. I don't mind if it comes up at other times. It often, to get it played at a funeral or something is a nice thing as well if it was somebody who served. But look, it's a significant way to pay respect, and I think it's a great way to do it. I also understand why some people think it should only be for certain occasions, but I think including the football, because sport is such a significant part of military life, is a really great way to pay tribute to that. And they often have some really good dignitaries or people that I've even served with who show up at some of these things and have quite great positions there. So
good time for a reflection when you hear that.
Yeah,
100%. Seriously.
There's no way you can hear the last post at any event. And as long as I think it's directed that this is what we're here to signify, and then you listen and you're instantly drawn to the sacrifices made for our country by people such as yourself. I think it's brilliant.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, it's I never have a problem with it being played. I think it's great, and I think it needs to be really held in that regard, and I think it is. I think football's a great way to do that.
I'm with you, mate. Now, you served in Afghanistan, was that right?
Correct. Yeah, I went to Afghanistan in 2010 and 2012.
I've got to ask, when you see these movies that are made, we see it on TV, is it truly reflective, or is it of what went on, or is it worse sometimes?
Some are, some aren't. Of course, it's hard to reflect on some of the recent movies that were made about previous conflicts, but some are really good. Part of my process of being involved in Invictus, you've got to have some stuff, and I've got, the usual psychological injuries, chronic post-traumatic stress disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, alcohol use disorder, and major depressive disorder. The PTSD, I notice, has come up in the last 12 months of watching some of those movies. I had a couple of nights where my wife would be out, and kids would go to bed, my wife would be out having drinks with friends, and, you'd reflect, you'd eventually find yourself on Netflix watching some war movie, and I'd be like, no, it doesn't feel right. So I don't know when I'll go back to watching some of those. But I do have some friends at work as technical consultants on some of those movies now.
Yep.
So I think some of the new ones that you'll see coming out are quite good. quite accurate.
And you did mention the Invictus Great Games. This is a great concept, which is the pet project of Prince Harry.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's an incredible opportunity. A really good friend of mine who I served with in 2010, who was my platoon sergeant, has been involved as a competitor in three games. And he's now involved behind the scenes. And we met at another mate we served with's wedding, and he said, why don't you come along and check it out? And I've had another mate who'd done it and had a look at it. And it wasn't until I stepped through the door and for the selection weekend in October that I was like, my goodness, this is so great to be in this community. It's really supportive and it's been amazing.
Brilliant. And what are you competing in?
I like to say rowing machine, but they call it indoor rowing. When I say indoor rowing, people go, is there a pool inside? So I bought a rowing machine a number of years ago,
yeah.
Just for my own workouts at home. And so it was a natural fit. I'm really loving that. I don't know if I'm going to get quite the results that I'm hoping to get, but I'm doing my best.
Yeah.
It's a great way to knock yourself around. I'm doing seated volleyball, which anybody out there listening who is not quite sure how that works, it's incredibly addictive. It just gets your competitive self going, and you're like, God, I've got to get this ball. It's just so full on.
So what, you're in chairs?
No, you're sitting down.
Oh, you're not sitting down on the court?
Yeah, so they lower the... Everyone's wondering, they actually lower the net so you can get it over. But you're sliding it, and they've got techniques, and you slide around on your bum and you're hitting these balls.
Low friction material. So what, you're skidding across the top of the floor.
Pretty much.
Rob, just turn around and just show Craig, would you, with the size of his clacker?
Listen, this is quite muscular.
How would that go? That'd be like dragging the Titanic.
Oh, no. It'd be like on ice skates.
And also, you're doing archery as well.
Yeah, doing archery also. So with three kids under the age of six, I'm trying to squeeze in some time to get along to an archery range. It's not really easy, but I've had a couple of goes, and I can see why people go from shooting firearms to shooting archery.
Yeah.
I can see how it would be similarly addictive. I've had a couple of goes. They lend you a bow and they tell you to go find a place.
Yeah.
And actually a bloke who came along to my walk actually is like the president of some bush range that's not far, like just off the edge of the Central Coast somewhere. So I'm hoping he comes back to the walk so I can go along to that one. It sounded awesome.
We had a bow and arrow we bought for the kids, and it only goes about 20 metres.
Yeah.
How far are you pulling? How far is
a bow and arrow kit? Hard, and you've got to get your chin into it. And apparently, I've been sent just in the mail this week these finger grips to help you to do it. It's actually a real thing. There's this Australian Olympian who started his own business. I can't remember the name of it, so it's not a plug or anything, has donated a whole bunch to us. So I've got to actually get out there and do it, because otherwise the coach is going to know when I show up to the weekend to...
Don't forget the finger grips.
When you said about rowing, because my buddy over there, he always bangs on about how good he does on the rowing machine. Even. We should put Rob Palmer and Craig Ball, who's going to the Invictus Games for seated rowing, or indoor rowing, and just see how good all the talk, mate.
All you want to do is see
on.
Me go
game
down.
Game on is all I can say. Let's go.
Beautiful. No. We've got a challenge. Anyway, as well, just quickly, you've got a book, because as you said, what you've gone through, chronic post-traumatic stress, anxiety, and with what you guys seen, I could imagine that would be very common with a lot of those who serve for us. You've got your book out, Reclaim Your Power.
Yeah, 100%. I've been teaching this program on and off over the last 20 years, and I can actually credit my recovery from my psychological injuries to the content that's in that book. I've been, I used to do motivational speaking with high school kids back in the day, and a whole lot of other groups that I've presented to, and I've been teaching largely the same thing. And when I came back and had all these things to work through, I'm not advocating any, I'm a big advocate, I should say, for professional support and professional help. And I still see a counselor to this day, but a lot of the deeper work I've been able to do and the results I've been able to get from what I teach. And yeah, it's my life's work in a lot of ways.
Where can we get this, mate?
You can get it by going to reclaimyourbook.com. That's my website, which you can, order it direct, but it's also available on all online bookstores.
Sweet. Craig Ball from Canmore, served in the ADF. Mate, Anzac Day, have a great one tomorrow. Thank you for what you've done too, buddy.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Craig.
Cheers.
And we look forward to that challenge with Mr. Palmer.
You can't make these outlandish claims and then he's going to make it out like I've challenged you.
Palmer has challenged Craig Ball.
No, he hasn't.
Paddy and Rob Palmer, the podcast.
I keep running to the post box each day, Robert, hoping the envelope will be there.
With what? With your invitation?
Mm-hmm. To the coronation.
I don't know that it's...
Don't know. Well, everyone else is pulling out. So I thought, surely, They go to the...
A lot just said no.
To performing as well as rocking up.
Said sorry, not doing it.
Like I thought I could replace Megan. She's not going. Because Harry's going by himself. Meg's staying home looking after the kids, as you do.
Well, Harry's obviously, he's got to have a plus one, isn't he?
Yeah, of course. And there'd be me. Yeah. And the Pope has already sent the gift. We spoke about that on Friday. Yeah. Two splinters of wood. The fragments are 10 millimetres long. Yeah, and nice. As a personal coronation gift from the Pope, we did look at it on last week. Is it a gift?
Is it really the...
I don't know.
The actual cross.
From the cross. I don't know about that, but a lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people are talking about
it. Yeah. Hello, Triple M.
Good morning. It's the Reverend Father
T.J. McArdle from the Church of the Sacrificial Lamb
with gravy and three vegetables.
Paddy and Rob Palmer, thank you for joining in and hello.
Good morning, Father. How was attendance at Mass on the weekend?
Robert, the parishioners of the Central Coast have come out in abundance.
That's good.
And when I mean come out, I mean have shown up.
Right.
It's funny how words and sayings have different meanings in 2023. In the good old days, Coke with ice in Wyoming used to mean just a cold soft drink.
Father, we mentioned what the Pope sent for King Charles's coronation. Has the church sent anything in the post?
Patrick, that we have.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Right.
I am so busy, I won't be able to attend the coronation of His Majesty on May 6th.
That's a shame.
Just like a lot of others, we put our thinking caps on at the presbytery, and the gift has been sent.
Right. What did you think of the Pope's gift that he sent?
Robert, I was part of the gift-giving conversations with the Holy Father.
Right.
He called me last week at the Church of the Sacrificial Lamb.
He would have.
And inquired about sending the 5mm... and 10 millimetre long bits of wood.
Uh-huh. A good gift, do you think, Father TJ?
A marvellous gift, I said to Pope Francis.
Yes.
And if that is the yardstick, I could send King Charles a toothpick.
Yeah.
And he'll be doing cartwheels.
Fair enough. So what did the church send as a gift to King Charles for his coronation, Father?
A pair of tweezers.
Okay.
Just in case.
Of course.
This is going to be a low-rent coronation, let me tell you.
Uh-huh.
For the Church of the Sacrificial Lamb, I'm the Reverend Father T.J. McArdle.
Teddy and Rob Palmer, the podcast. A friend of mine's got a little bit of a beef with a mother-in-law.
Oh, who doesn't? Hands up. Oh, jeez.
Look at you.
I've got my hands and legs up.
me next.
You remember when you used to flick your fingers like that at school? Sir, when you'd know one answer. Yeah. Sir. Me! He used to smile.
Arching your back.
Yeah, you go.
Your hand trying to reach the ceiling.
I remember nine by nine, and in grade 12, but
chest
that didn't matter.
Okay. So straight it was nearly touching your own backside.
And that's like me today with a mother-in-law. No, you know what? I'm not doing any mother-in-law stories today.
Well, this particular mother-in-law, she went out. And my friend had bought a gift, special gift for the kid.
Right.
Little kid. And the mother-in-law's taken the kid out. But instead of just taking the kid out, has gone in and found this said gift, which was a pair of shoes, special shoes for a special occasion, and just decided to open them. They were wrapped. Just open them, put them on the kid, and off they went. Sees the kid come home with the mother-in-law wearing the shoes that she had planned to give as this wonderful gift for this special occasion. You go, what the hell are you doing? But you just can't say that to your mother-in-law because they don't understand. But made me just think about how lucky I am to have the mother-in-law that I do. She is the hands down the easiest mother-in-law I've ever had. No, actually, it's the only mother-in-law.
You hoped to have, anyway.
Oh, jeez. She's the most lovely woman.
Yeah.
She's understanding. She's like kind. She's friendly. We get on really, really well, except for just this one time.
Yeah.
When I was had my wife and her father, I was around at their place.
Mm.
So Gwen and her father are having an argument about something. Gwen's clearly in the wrong.
Yeah.
There's no way on God's green earth that Gwen is getting out of this with anything other than a get out of here, stupid.
Yeah.
Anyway, and to watch your wife and her father argue is quite uncomfortable at the best of times. Anyway, so then Gwen storms off, and I'm looking, going, oh no, what do I do now? I've just witnessed this whole thing. I'm in the kitchen with the in-laws. I looked at Gwen. I looked at the in-laws. They looked at me. I proceeded to go over to Gwen, give her a hug and say, hey, it's okay. It's okay. And then I went back to the kitchen, whereas Gwen's just stormed off in the other direction. I can't talk to them. And then I went into the kitchen. There's my mother-in-law, the nicest woman in the world, looking at me over folded arms with her head down, just going, that was pathetic. I shrunk to the size of an ant. I had nowhere to go.
Shrunk to the size of a hoo-ha.
Sorry.
See?
Sorry, and left.
And then it begins. But, you know, well, they can be cruel and cutting. But, look, I love my mother-in-law. I really do. I do. Don't laugh, Robin. Because you know why? You know why? I really do. Because she lives in Hobart and I live here. So look. We've got news coming up pretty soon. Scotty Leek is covering what's happening.
I've worked out why I love my mother-in-law so much.
She lives in Wales.
She lives on the other side of the world.
Yes, exactly, mate. It is the bit you don't realise how good it is. And you only have to see them once a year.
Doesn't distance, mate. The hard drive Honda.
Paddy and Rob Palmer, the podcast. Subscribe now and you'll never miss an episode.